Are we live, Grace?
We're live!
Happy Labor Day. Did you labor today?
I did minimal laboring, which was fabulous. Did you labor?
I think that's what the holiday's for, is to do as little laboring as possible, right?
Yes.
No, I didn't. I didn't. I labored in a different way, but it was like the best way I could ever labor.
Oh, what is the best way ever of laboring?
Erica labored with me. She was just getting ready to be here, and now she's gone. But we'll get to that. Yeah, it was fun. I love laboring when I'm not told I have to labor.
Uh-huh. Does that mean running? Did you run a little?
Yeah, we did Green Monster stuff.
Fun.
Yeah, it was. Super fun. You want to start this Labor Day show?
Let's do it.
No, not yet, because I have fun facts.
Oh, fun facts.
Did you know it takes 72 helium balloons to lift a 5-pound chihuahua off the ground?
I did not know that. Have you tested this to be sure that it's accurate?
No, but I'll be honest with you. I'm not a huge chihuahua or like tiny dog fan. So
yeah,
I'd be happy to be the scientist to test it.
Okay.
I don't know. Here's another one. You ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
Tarantulas taste like shrimp.
Oh, have you tested this one?
No.
Okay. Are you going to?
That would be stupid. But the fact I love shrimp, so it's make me want to eat a tarantula more, but I don't know.
Yeah. It's put it on your bucket list, you know?
I have something to confess. This isn't comfortable for me to talk about. Okay. But after realizing where I got said information, I don't know if it's true. Do you remember the seals raping the penguins?
Yeah, unfortunately. I keep trying to not remember, and you keep bringing it up.
So I found that on Reddit, and apparently I don't know if that's a legit site.
Yeah, Reddit is not a good place for for accuracy.
But it said it was a fact, so I went with it. Whoa. And now I'm not so sure. So if anybody out there can confirm or deny the fact that seals sometimes rape penguins, to get confirmation on that. Oh, so I'm putting myself out there saying I can't confirm or deny this. But so
aren't you the one who always says this is a family friendly show?
Yeah, it was a fact though, and it was an interesting fact. But we got to get this show going, so we'll let that linger for a little bit.
Okay.
All right, Grace. It's Labor Day, and I had off of work, which I never mind. Let's talk about our long weekend on episode 79. I'm Eric Idiot Renner Kosek.
And I'm Grace Hot Pants Langheim. Eric is all business in the front of the pack, and I am all about the party in the back.
That's right. Business up front and party in the back. Together, we are the Running Mullet.
And we are going to talk about every aspect of running, the podium to the DNF and everything in between.
If you are a runner, this show is for you. Now sit back, get out your foam roller, and enjoy the party. Good evening, Grace.
Good evening.
Oh, man, you had a weekend, huh?
I had a crazy busy weekend. Yeah. Yeah.
So you moved your daughter back into college, I hear.
Yes.
For her, this is her senior year?
It's her senior year. Yep.
Oh, my boy. And then you and Callie did this like undercover adventure thing. What was the race called?
Tuscazor
50 miler. Is it a 50 miler and other stuff, or is it just a 50 miler?
It's a 50 miler and other stuff. That was not the primary race. Yeah.
Is there a 100 miler also?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a 100 miler happening. There's a 25 miler happening. There's a 50 miler happening. And then they also have a night start 25 miler and a night start 50 miler.
Okay.
Yeah. So backing that train up, beow, beow, beow. That was not a backup beep.
No, beep. Trains don't back up really, honestly.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So here's what happened. Thursday night, I worked all day and then did some volunteer work with the fire company, local fire company. got done at about 8 o'clock, drove 2 hours to Bedford, Pennsylvania, picked up Callie, drove 3 more hours to Kent, Ohio, got into Kent at about 1 o'clock in the morning, got up the next day, drove 5 hours to Michigan, packed up the car with my daughter's stuff, drove 2 hours to Detroit, unpacked everything, went out to dinner, walked around Detroit, drove 3 hours back to Ohio, went to bed, got up the next day, got everything ready, 7 o'clock start, ran a 50 miler, done by 11 o'clock on Sunday, slept some, then drove 5 hours back home, and I got home at 6 o'clock this morning.
Oh, so you had all day.
Did you follow all that?
You had all day today to just chill out. That's awesome.
Oh my gosh. It was nuts. It was a crazy schedule of a weekend. And I got to do it all with Callie. And Callie is just such a fun, awesome person. And we had talked about doing Tuscazor. She wanted to do it last year as her 100 miler, and she ended up doing Wild Goose instead. And then she heard that I had it on my radar, and she's like, well, can I come? I'm like, well, do you want to deal with sitting in the car with me for a very long time? And she's like, sure. And so that's what we did.
All right. So real quick, before we bring on our amazing guests, give us a rundown of this race. Why was it on your radar?
Honestly, it was on my radar because it was on my way home. Because it wasn't too far from the turnpike.
Well, talk about the course itself and what it was.
Yeah, it was a great race. It ended up, race director was great. Aid stations were, one of the aid stations, this was so fun. The theme was your wedding day. So they had like this, like when you went past a little sensor, it would play the wedding march. They had flowers that you could take with you to this little overlook. But it's at some great single track trails. Almost all of it was single track, just a smidge of road and a smidge of some double track. But a lot of rolling hills, a couple of vistas, great aid stations with everything you can think of, went along a canal for a little bit. So beautiful course.
We're talking about Ohio. So I would assume very,
beautiful. I want to hate on Ohio pretty bad. And I will say that Ohio is in general, a terrible state. And then there happens to be this one race that they really did a good job at. So, and I love having a night start. I think it's a cool concept, you know, to allow that night start since you're going to have a 100 miler anyway. And we had a 19 hour cutoff for the 50 miler, which is really, really gracious. And for a back-of-pack runner like me. And we also took the opportunity to have like glow in the dark nail polish, and we put in glow in the dark hair extensions. And it was super fun.
What I was getting at with Ohio, was it a pretty flat race?
No, we ended up with around 5,000 feet of gain for a 50 miler. So it's not long hills, but it was just kind of constant up and down. I'm used to constant up and down being in southern Pennsylvania, but Callie definitely, like, she wanted a good 1,000-foot climb, and that wasn't going to happen, you know. So it's a lot of rollers, but it wasn't flat, but it had a couple of flat sections.
Did you guys run the whole thing together?
We did the whole thing. It was neat. Nice.
Yeah. Cool. Good time.
Oh yeah. We had a great time. I think the aid station volunteers were a little weirded out by how happy we were for 50 miles, but you know.
So was it, it was a loop of some sorts. It looked like a lot of spaghetti going on or not.
Yeah. It was just a big splotch of spaghetti, mountain bike trails. Just kind of splotched around, and there was, you know, part in a field, and then you'd go by a canal, and then you'd hit the mountain bike trails again. And usually I hate mountain bike trails. These ones didn't feel like I was doubling back on myself the whole time, even though I was for part of it. So this one didn't feel too much like it was humid. But other than that, it was good.
How many runners did you have people around you the whole time?
No, definitely the daytime 25 and the daytime 50 had a lot more people. The night 25 and the night 50, between the two of them, I think there were like 30 or 40 people starting.
Oh.
So we mostly ran with, once the 25 people were done, it was just the night 50 mile people and the 100 milers who were finishing up, and that was it. So the race had a good turnout as far as participants, but we didn't see a lot of people because of us starting at night, you know?
Yeah. Well, hey, that's a double 50 miler for you, back to back weekends, right?
Yeah, back-to-back weekends. I didn't know if it was going to happen. I was fully prepared to drop down to the 25 because they do allow that. So I kind of didn't want to get it into my head, but happy that after 25 miles, I still felt like going, you know?
Heck yeah. Great job.
Thanks.
All right. Anything else you want to say about that race?
No, it was done by Race Brimstone was the
organization.
Yeah. They have another one called Eagle Up Ultra that I've heard good things about as well. So, well done.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, congrats. Did you win an age group award?
I did win an age group award. I haven't seen final results, but, beforehand we knew that there were age group awards. We weren't sure if the 50 day people and the 50 night people would be separate or together. We ended up being separate, and I think there were only 3 people in my age group, but I'll take it. I don't care.
Hey, you know, you can never control who signs up. Who cares?
Exactly. And Callie also got an age group award. Thankfully, we're in different age groups, so we both walked away with an age group award, which was maple syrup, and I am never going to turn down some maple syrup.
Mm-mm. That's expensive stuff and delicious.
Yeah, and it was made right at that campground where the race was.
Nice. I mean, the trees make it, but so there.
That's true.
But yeah.
The trees lived there at that campus.
That's awesome. Congrats.
Thanks.
All right. Let's bring on our amazing, beautiful, crazy friend to the show, Erica Lubera. She's done some crazy things. Last time she was on, we talked a bunch about books, running books, audio books, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
She had a big year this year, a lot of big things this past summer, and some stuff coming up this fall. I had the joy of running some with her today at the Green Monster. She hammered out the 50K plus Green Monster. What'd you end up with, 33 miles?
I had 34, Cliff Perfect. Had 35. We don't know what happened.
Bonus
miles.
I bailed out at the 25K mark, so I had 17. So, but either way, today was I don't know about you, Grace, but today up here was, I could take today every day of the year. Like, it was perfect.
Perfect.
It was nice. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, Erica, welcome back.
Thank you. Happy to be back.
Yeah. So we talked a little bit this morning about, you know, you being on the show tonight, and you said, you know, a good way of kind of starting it off was to talk a little about, you know, hiking and running, and what was it, starting off as a hiker and then getting into running, or vice versa?
So starting out as a runner and getting into backpacking, I think what Grace and I were also talking about,
being like, which
segue maybe, but
yeah, we
want to talk about.
And here's where this comes from is I've had several people approach me about backpacking. Trail runners approach me about backpacking, and I keep telling them, like, I am not the person to talk to about backpacking. Talk to Erica. And by the way, Erica has this company called Wild Roots Guides, where she takes people on backpacking trips, which does include some beginner backpacking. And you're the much better person to talk to about that. But I am finding more and more people who are interested, who are trail runners, and they're interested in backpacking, and they're kind of unsure of where to start. And so we were talking about that, and I said, Erica, you should talk about this, not me.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. And like, coming from both the backpacking world and the trail running world, I can say you like can enjoy both. I think sometimes like some backpackers might think, oh, like they're moving so fast, they're not enjoying it. Well, we're enjoying it. It's amazing. But you can also slow down and enjoy it too. So like, these are maybe different activities, but they share a lot of commonalities. And I thought it'd be fun to talk about like how some of your trail running skills can carry over into backpacking, if that is something that you are interested in exploring more. And then of course there are the differences, what you need to be aware of and be ready for if you're making that little leap.
Absolutely.
Perfect. Do you want me to dive in?
Yeah. Start off with what's similar. Like, yeah. What have you found, especially? And so you have Wild Roots Guides, which you, that's been going on for 2-3 years now.
This is the end of year three. Next year is year four. I'm deep into planning for next year, and I hope to have some info to share on that soon. But we're not quite. I'm not quite ready yet.
Yeah. And so you have good experience, not just your own personal experience, but what you have seen. You know, it's not just runners turned backpackers. You also have, you know, hikers turned backpackers and everything in between. But not just from your experience, but from what you've heard from other people too. What are those things that are most helpful making that transition that you're like, oh, these things are pretty much the same?
Yeah, absolutely. So, the obvious one is the love of the outdoors. If you love trail running because you like to have your feet hitting the dirt and looking at the trees and being surrounded by nature, hearing the wind rustle through the trees, which was one of my favorite parts about this morning, was just the cool wind blowing through the trees, and it was so quiet. But that's, you're obviously going to get just a lot more of that. So that's the obvious one. It's kind of just an extension of trail running. So you're going to be out there for longer. You'll be out there all day, overnight, into the next day, depending on how long your trip is. That could go on for, you know, indefinitely. But yeah, I also feel like one of the biggest similarities is the community vibe. One thing that I know I really love, and I think a lot of people really love about the trail running community, is just how cool everyone is and how like supportive everyone is and open to adventure. And you get the same vibe from the backpacking community. And like a good example of that is a few weeks ago, I was guiding a trip out in Loyalsock. If you're familiar with Old Logger's Path, that's where we were. And as you know, Tropical Storm Debbie was coming through that weekend, and we had to seriously adjust our route to avoid some flooding and stay safe. But there were other backpackers out there, and every time we passed them, they would give us reports on like what they just saw and what they just experienced and give us a heads up. And then you'd stop and chat for a while because we're out enjoying the same thing. So, and you get a lot of that in trail running too, I feel. So there's some similarities there on what to expect from the vibe of the community. But some more skill-based things that can carry over. Trail savvy. Like if you're out going on a trail run, you're probably following a map or a, some sort of an app with directions or maybe blazes on trees. And if that's something you feel comfortable with, I know not all trail runners are super comfortable with that, but just know that that is a skill that can carry over. And that's important. Navigation, knowing where you're going. So that's definitely something that's similar. I could go through a whole list here, but if there's any questions, just let me know. I'm not paying attention to that down there. But
well, what was one of the you might not have an answer to this. What were some things that were surprising to you that were very similar and you didn't necessarily expect them to be similar?
Well, if we're going all the way back to when I first started backpacking, trail shoes. I started out like most people who do start out hiking first. I started out as a hiker. I didn't trail run first. I wore hiking boots. And then when I started trail running, I was told, you need trail runners for that. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, I'll buy the trail runners. And then I go on my hikes and do my hiking boots, use my hiking boots. And I found out over time, that is a very old and outdated style of backpacking. I think hiking boots still have a practical use and application in hiking, but it's probably best used for like day hikes, shorter trips where you know you're not going to get a deluge of rain for an hour during one of those days. So that was a surprise to me personally that like I could just wear trail runners while backpacking.
Yeah. Now I
have a little pair of shoes that do all the things.
Yeah. I've seen more and more of that. I belong to a couple of different backpacking Facebook groups, and there's more and more hikers will recommend trail runners to other newbies out there. If they're looking for a pair of boots, everybody quickly chimes in and says, don't get boots.
You'll always have that one person that sees the trail runners though, and they're like, you really need boots to support your ankles. And it's like, do you, buddy, but I'm going to keep using my trail runners. They've made a huge difference for me. Not just with how quickly they dry out once they get wet, but for me personally, and I think there's other people out there like me, I have hot feet. And when my feet get hot, I get blisters like quickly. Mm-hmm. So trail runners just completely changed the world for me in terms of blister control.
Nice.
Which is another thing that is very similar. The same things you do to treat your feet for blisters while trail running can likely carry over into backpacking. The only difference might be you have to keep in mind that you're going to be carrying these items on your person. They're not at an aid station somewhere. They're not back in your car. You have to have them on you so that you can use them as needed, like in your first aid kit.
Nice. So you can't bring all the things or you're going to get punished for it.
I definitely I'm a big supporter of being smart light. Like, let's bring the things you need. Like, don't leave the first aid kit at home. Please bring that with you. But do you need 800 Band-Aids? Maybe not. Bring what makes sense. But don't bring things that you absolutely don't need, because you're going to regret it. You're going to wish you could throw it off a cliff. Like, when your back hurts and your knees hurt and you're tired and you just wish you didn't have these 30, 40 pounds on your back.
Yeah. And you have, I should back up and say that you've also thru-hiked the entire Appalachian Trail. Mm-hmm. We're excited because soon we're going to have Georgetta on, who just thru-hiked the entire Appalachian Trail this summer. But you did this maybe 4 or 5 years ago. So you've been through that process of thinking that you need something and then discovering, I need to chuck this.
Yeah. And for me, it really was like an ongoing process. I hiked it with my husband, so I'll say we a lot. But we trained for probably 2 years going on littler backpacking trips and working our way up to like an 80-mile backpacking trip before we attempted the AT. And I think that was really helpful for us because there was actually very little change that we made once on trail. I think the biggest change that I made was that I sent my kitchen sink home after about 2,000 miles. I was really stubborn with that. I was told by a DCNR worker right before I started the trail, like at the trailhead, the beginning of the AT in Georgia, you're not going to want that. And I was like, watch me. And we used it until I got to New Hampshire, where the trail gets infamously more difficult. And I was like, I'm anything and everything I absolutely don't need is going home. And that went home.
That's all right.
I said kitchen sink. It packed down to this big and it held 10 liters of water. And the name is just hilarious. But maybe use it for little baths at night or to like wash dishes. I usually drink my dishwater, which is a funny thing to say, but I could explain that more.
Oh my gosh. You put maple syrup in there.
What's that?
Put a little maple syrup in there.
Really? That would have helped a lot with some of the more unpalatable dishwaters that I've had to drink. There's no soap in there. You just squirt some water in your bowl and you use a spoon first to kind of knock all of the food particles down into the water. Then you drink.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Makes sense. Don't want to waste anything.
Yeah, definitely. I want all them calories. My delicious, nutritious dishwater.
Boy, I've not heard of that one. I'm learning all kinds of stuff. So what are some of the tips that you have then for people who, how do you get started if you're currently a trail runner and you would like to try backpacking?
Sure. Two other things just to quickly note that are very similar: hiking clothes. That question a lot from trail runners who are trying to get into backpacking, and they're like, I don't know what to wear. I'm like, honestly, you don't need to worry about it. Wear what you wear trail running and then some extra things. So that one's really similar. Obviously there's more that can be talked about on hiking clothes, especially when it comes to camp clothes and layering, but for the most part, your go suit, what you're walking in, that's going to be pretty similar, if not exactly the same. And then, your cardio is definitely going to be helpful. Like all the hill climbing you do, all the downhill running you do, navigating rocks and routes, that's going to be a skill that carries over.
Nice.
Differences though, I mean, the number one biggest difference is obviously gear and the fact that you're carrying it all on your back, and there's no one, you can definitely like plan some like a vehicle or two if you want along the way, but that's not typically the case for backpackers. It's not like in the style of backpacking, if you know what I mean. So mostly you're carrying everything. The only time where I think hikers will do some sort of drop is a food drop. So you can only carry so much food, and then you're going to be out of food and you're going to need more. So usually every 3 to 5 days, depending on who you are and what your route is, you'll plan a resupply, whether that's mailing that to you or somebody placed the vehicle at a point that's halfway through your route. I've had a family just bring us food. We had a box of food. They were like, can you just drive this to this road crossing on this day at this time? That'd be great. But there's different ways to do it. But for the most part, yeah, it's gear. You need a tent, you need a sleeping bag, you need a backpack that can hold all of these things and not break under the weight. So that's something that's a much bigger conversation. And I think the majority of my consultations are talking about gear and what you need, because that's probably everyone who's getting into backpacking. That's going to be where you start. Yeah. Your trekking poles they're one of those ones that like, I feel like they kind of carry over, but they kind of don't. Maybe use trekking poles when you're running, or maybe you hate them, but for backpacking, please bring trekking poles. I call them optional, but highly recommended. Like they are so useful. You're usually not going home the next day. You're backpacking more. A backpacking trip, usually you have at least 2 full days of hiking. You can hike shorter days, but the thing is you are waking up the next day and hiking more, whether it's 2 miles or 10. So you're having back-to-back days. And if you didn't want the trekking poles the first day, I'm so sure you'll want them the second day.
Oh my gosh. When I did, back in January, was it January, February? When I did that 55 mile section of the AT, I had my poles with me attached to my pack. And my plan was to go about the first 12 miles without getting them out. And there was a foot of snow had just landed like the day before. And I literally got my poles out in less than half a mile. I was like, yeah, this is not happening. I need them immediately. Yeah.
And that's exactly why they're more useful, because in the snow adds a whole nother layer to it, but it's for stability. Mm-hmm. You're out there carrying probably 25 to 35 pounds on your back. Your body's not used to carrying that extra weight around, and you're going to be unbalanced more than normal. Maybe you shouldn't be too unbalanced. Then you should probably look at repacking your pack. But to some extent, you're going to want something when your legs and hips and stability muscles are tired to help keep you upright, and it helps avoid falls. It takes pressure off your joints in the snow. And that had to have been even more of a problem. Just how slippery it is, not knowing what's under the snow, where your foot's going to land. Yeah.
So, I mean, I just got to emphasize that one. Bring your poles. Just bring them.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And and you know, you mentioned in passing, you said something about consultations, and you do consultations, which you've done for me. Yeah. So I can vouch for them if anybody out there is listening and is interested in a consultation. Wild Roots Guides is Erica, and she's very good with consultations, and we'll go through piece by piece everything that you plan on bringing and tell you very gently and nicely where you should probably reconsider some things.
Yeah, I mean, I do try. I really didn't have to do that much with you. You were pretty well set with your plans. Yeah. And there's a lot of individuality about it too. Is mm-hmm. that the right word? Like everyone has their own idiosyncrasies, right? Like what works perfect for me could be your worst nightmare.
Yeah.
So yeah. A lot of the time I'm trying to figure out, okay, is this something that like, this might be like what works for you kind of thing. So I try to weigh that, I'm very, let me use the right word, weary.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So hesitant, right? I keep getting that wrong. So I want to make sure I get that right. Yeah. I'm very weary of anyone out there giving advice that says, this is what you have to do. This is the one way to do it right. And that just is not the case with backpacking. I don't even think it's really the case for trail running. Although there are some things in both cases where it's like, you probably should not leave your raincoat at home while backpacking ever. Even if it says the forecast is perfect, please pack the raincoat. It's such a wonderful backup emergency item. You never want to need it and not have it.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it like there's, you have to kind of weigh those things, but yeah. So that's actually another thing on my list of differences and things to be aware of when you're coming from the trail running world and getting into the backpacking world. Trail runners often bring a windy jacket. Houdini is really popular. There's lots of others. OR has a really good one. And they work great for trail running. They mostly keep you warm unless it's a really cold rain and you're in it for a long time. So those are great trail running tools. They do not work for backpacking. You're not going to build up as much heat as you're used to when you're running. You need something that's waterproof and it doesn't have to be fancy. I'm a fan of a $15 frog tog from Walmart. I look ridiculous, but I'm warm. And that's the point.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. That's another one that you'll want to like kind of wrap your head around. Food is different, obviously. Usually on trail runs, you're going home afterwards and have a cooked meal or going out to eat or you're stopping at McDonald's. That's just not an option when you're backpacking. So being mindful of how you store your food, how much food you're bringing, how easy it is to unpack and pack. Like a good example is a bag of chips. You might as well just crush them all up into tiny bits before you start shaking, because that's what you're going to have by the end of the day. But yeah, there's really not a lot else that isn't under the gear category. Like just figuring out the gear is a big one. And if you really like to shower every night, you might want to let go of that expectation.
Or not hike, one or the other.
Yeah. I will share this. I have something that I call a hobo bath. There's lots of other names for it, but I call it a hobo bath, where you carry wet wipes. And at the end of the day, you just like wet wipe down and you can have this feeling of being clean.
I'll tell you what, like the wet wipes, I'm sure work good. I don't know. I feel a little like sticky after I use wet wipes. I don't know why, but it's just the way I feel. But from what you're saying, like I did overnight trips when I was younger and stuff. And it's amazing what just putting water on your body and drying off does. Like the soap, obviously, in a perfect world, it gets the dirt off you and you feel great. But you can feel really clean by just getting, you know, jumping in a stream or pouring water all over you, in my opinion. And then going, because I've always been a shower at night before I go to bed type person. I have to be clean before I go to sleep. Those people that go to bed dirty and wake up and get a shower, you're heathens. I don't know how you do it. But even when we're on our trips, I went trout fishing in British Columbia and stuff like that, where it's been a week of, you know, no showers. Just jumping in, getting that water on you and drying off is like Amazing.
Oh, it feels so good, and it's so refreshing. Like,
yeah, and you're not doing cool. much. You're not getting the nastiness off, really, but it sure feels like you are.
Yeah, I agree. Again, there's no one right way to take a shower on trail. You can jump in the puddle next to you, or you can crawl in the stream, or use a wet wipe, or do nothing.
Honestly. Dishwater. Can I use my dishwater?
No, you drink that, remember?
Got it. Drink the dishwasher. Okay. Drink the
dishwasher.
Bathe in the creek. Got it. Okay.
Do all not right. put your dishwater in the creek, though. That is
okay.
That is a no-no.
That's a leave no trace.
Yeah. Bad, well, yeah. So it's right? a leave no trace principle. Please do not put your dishwater in the creek.
Okay. Gotcha.
Can we please talk
Let's
about
talk already. Let's talk. Yeah, that was all my things.
Okay. Yeah. So I really love that you did that. Thank you, Erica. For anybody who is interested, I mean, give it a shot. Give some backpacking a shot. It's super fun.
So, Erica, you've had a big summer. We could go way back and talk about your last fall. You had a big fall. You won some races. You've had a good year of running in general, especially when it comes mm-hmm. to competitive racing. This early summer, I joined you. We went up to the White Mountains. We ran the Pemmy Loop 50K, which was amazing. I highly mm-hmm. recommend anybody to get up there and do that. And then shortly after that, a couple weeks, I believe only, you ran the Jigger Johnson 50 miler.
Yeah.
So real quick, give us a rundown of what that, like, I don't think it's hard to describe what that race is because of the numbers and the elevation gain involved mm-hmm. and what it entails. And there's also a 100 miler that a friend of ours that did the Pemmy Loop also completed last year. But you placed in this race, and give us a quick rundown of how that went.
Yeah. So it's funny. All of the language online says it's a 50 miler, but then you get there and they're like, it's actually 57. As you're looking at the GPS file, you're like, weird. This is 57. Usually you round up, but we're going to go with 50. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, it's, it turns out to be 57 on most everyone's navigation and watches, unless you're my watch. And then you just throw in a bonus 59. But I think I'm just very, you know, I talk with my hands, so maybe that's what it was. And then I believe there's about 16,000 feet of gain, if I have that right. I'm pretty sure that that's what they have online. And it's in New Hampshire. So, as you can imagine, a lot of that gain is like accumulated all in one, in a big ass climb. So there's at least in my mind, at least four big ass climbs that like stuck out to me. Like these are the big climbs, and there's elevation obviously with every trail race that you gather as you go. I signed up for it because I was looking for a 100 miler and I had this on my radar. I saw that Steven, I forget, I think maybe even Sayard, my coach, had mentioned it to me, but I remembered Steven, who did the Pemmy Loop with us, had done it, and it looked crazy. Like it just looked wild. And I've been on a New Hampshire kick the past few years, going up there and getting some of the 4,000 footers. So I thought that'd be perfect for me. I looked at the 100 mile course and I saw that only two women finished last year and their times were 52 hours.
Wow. And I
was thinking to myself, I don't know if I'm up for a 52 mile, 100 miler, but I also don't have the vacation time for that. So what does the 50 miler look like? Mm-hmm. And so that was where the decision came from. But I was also really intrigued by the fact that it's kind of a low key race. You're not allowed to have crew. If you do have crew, so there is like a little trick to it. If you do have crew, they have to volunteer at one aid station and they have mm-hmm. to help all the runners,
yeah.
Which I think is really nice. It's a great idea. You can pick up pacers. I chose not to because I was going for that more unsupported vibe. And the other thing is it's not marked. The course is not marked. But if you've ever been in New Hampshire, it's pretty clear where you should walk.
Okay.
It's otherwise very dense, thick, and I'm going to use the wrong term, but like needle trees, like conifers, very mm-hmm. dense, thick forest up there with moss. And it's just, you're going to walk on the rocks. But I was excited by that, and I was not disappointed. Also, New Hampshire is beautiful. The views are just amazing. I feel like in a lot of ways, it's our little taste of the West Coast here on the East Coast.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, looking at the times, I honestly had no idea what to expect from myself. I've never done a race outside of Pennsylvania. This was my first.
Oh, this was your first.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, a little scary for my first one, but it was exciting scary.
Yeah.
A good point. Yeah. I think I don't even remember what I planned. I threw out a couple different times to my coach, and she was like, "You're allowed to break the course record if you want." And I was like, "Oh, hold on. Just hold on now. We'll see how I feel."
Yeah.
It was kind of, I actually technically did, but someone beat it much, much better than me. which doesn't, it actually, I should kind of explain, last year was a complete downpour. And there were a couple points in the race when I looked around me and I thought, if this was under a foot of water, which a lot of sections were just completely underwater, mm-hmm. I don't know what I would be doing. Cause even as it was, I was swinging like a monkey from trees, trying to like keep my feet from going into like this much bog mud.
Wow.
Which was fun. I was like, I've never swung from trees before. That's one way to do it.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. I enjoyed it. It broke me in some ways.
When you say that, so I want to ask, what did you learn from that?
That's a good question. I learned a lot about my stubbornness, how stubborn I can be.
Perseverance.
Yeah. I also learned that sometimes it's okay to let yourself sit down on a rock to eat your baby food that you're eating because you're tired and you've been climbing this massive mountain for 1,000 feet and you're not even halfway yet.
Yeah.
So you got second overall?
Second female overall, sixth overall.
And how many females finished the 100 miler this year? Do you know?
Oh, I don't know. But I do think the second place female finished in like 40 something. So still a lot faster than last year. Trail conditions were just a lot friendlier. Yeah.
Nice.
I don't know who got first either. I did look at that at one point and I forgot. I want to say though, the two girls that finished after me, and I got to see them finish. I got to see them a couple times throughout the race, and I think they ran a lot of it together. Every time I passed them going in and out of aid stations, I was like, they look like they're having so much freaking fun. Maybe I should slow down and hang out with them a little bit.
Yeah.
And then when they finished, the one did a cartwheel, and I was like, when I finished, I just laid on the ground like a dead person. Like,
yeah,
they definitely had a better time than me. I had a great time, but they had a better time, I want to say.
It's just different. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was pretty fun to see people out there smiling and having a fantastic time. Like I do think most people that I saw were happy, even some of the 100 milers. Because one of the cool things about this race is the 100 miler starts where you start, but the day before. And they start where you finish.
Oh.
They start where the 50 milers finish.
Okay.
Go to where the 50 milers start and then go back.
Oh, cool.
So it's an out and back. So the 50 milers get to see a lot of the 100 milers after they've done 50 plus miles.
Yeah. And you've essentially done what would be the 100 mile course if you would choose to go back. Are you interested in going back for the 100 mile?
I'm going to need a couple years to mull that over. At first, and even as I was running it, I was like, I would never run this for 100 miles. I'm so tired right now, and it's been 10 miles. I want to take a nap at 10 miles. I don't know how. But then after the race, you always look at things differently. And I was like, I could do that. Maybe.
Yeah. Nice.
I did want to ask every single one of them a million questions. Like, did you sleep? Where'd you sleep? Do you have a little tent in that pack? Because that's where my brain goes, is like, I'm going to want a nap, I think. over the course of 50 hours. I don't know.
Yeah. So kind of minimal support with this. Was it also aid stations a little bit further apart? You tend to see that with those types of races.
Yeah. I think most of them were, I want to say the first two were the farthest apart. It was like 17 and 15 apart for the first two. And then it gets a little shorter, I think, if I have that right. There were four aid stations over 57 miles. So the last two, generously, because everyone's tired and beat, were a lot closer. I think the last two are 8 miles apart.
Nice.
Which is nice. I don't remember what they had said about the aid stations, but I didn't know what to expect. It didn't seem like there's going to be a lot of food at the aid stations. So I had packed all the food that I wanted in my drop bags, and I'd roll into the aid station, grab my go bag, which was just the food I wanted to put in my pack. And I was just like, I'm going to grab my go bag and go. And then I'll throw my garbage out and pack my pack as I run. And I did pretty much do that, but I had this very strange obsession with ice all day. And it wasn't that hot, but I was just like, I need to chew on ice. Someone give me ice. And so every aid station I went into, I had them put ice like in my bladder, so I'd have cold ice water. Another thing I learned, I carry a Bee-Free now. Yeah. And you can get some refreshing cold ice water from the creek as you run. And I started doing that later on, where I would just, every creek I crossed, I'd fill it up with water, dump it on my face, drink some, and then keep going.
Yeah.
Rather than drinking that lukewarm water that I was carrying around.
Yeah.
So I would stop and I want to share one more story. At registration in the morning, I was waiting in line between a mother and son. The son was going to run it, and the mom, I think, I didn't know this at the time, but she was going to be helping out at an aid station. And we started talking, and I don't even know what we talked about, but we chatted while we waited. Then we got on the bus and left. And I saw him running quite a bit. Like, we leapfrogged at the start, and then he took off and left me in his dust. And then I get to, I think, aid station number 3 or 4, and there she is. There's the mom that I had been talking to. And I had told, she's like, what can I get you? I'm like, honestly, I just want ice. All I want is ice. And she's like, oh, do you want me to put some down your shirt? I was like, yes. And as I'm like packing all my stuff up, this person's talking to me, that person's talking to me, and I'm not paying attention. And meanwhile, she's standing there holding all this ice. And she's just like, I'm making an executive decision. And she just shoves the ice down my shirt and puts it in my bra. And I'm like, this is fine. Nice thing anyone has done for me all day. Thank you. And I ran away with all this ice just sitting in my bra. And it was amazing.
Yeah.
So I want to thank that woman a million times. That made me so happy.
It was
the
good
trail
call.
Community provides.
Yeah.
They do.
Things you don't even know that you need.
Absolutely. And they will be there.
Yeah, that was a fun race. Yeah. I got to talk to the first place female. That was pretty cool.
Awesome.
When I finished, I crossed the line. There was like 4 people sitting around, and she came over and shook my hand and was talking to me. And I'm like, are you the race director? No. And she still was too humble to say, I'm the woman who crushed you.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, he's over there. And I thanked him, and I'm like, well, who are you? She's like, oh, I'm the first place female. And she finished like, I want to say almost 2 hours ahead of me. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Like her.
Yeah.
I'd be curious to see what else she's doing this year.
yeah. And you, but you did hit your goal, which is, beat the course record, right?
That was one of those secret goals that I wasn't allowing myself to believe was a goal until I could feel it.
Yeah.
But my goal was a sub 18, I think.
Yeah.
I don't remember now. It was one of those days where I'm like, I don't know what to expect. I'm just going to go out and run by feel, and feel turned out to be pretty good.
Nice.
That's not to say there weren't some pretty epic lows, but that's trail running.
Yeah, that happens. Well, tell us, what was a low, and how did you push through it?
So I love climbing. a lot. Mm-hmm. I really, really love climbing, and I feel like those mountains betrayed me. I did not love climbing by mile 40 plus. There are 2 4,000 footers in the later half of the trail. And I'd say they are the most difficult. Osceola is first. And then I forget the name of the last mountain. But Osceola, I want to say, is the least forgiving. One cool thing is I saw a moose before going up Osceola, and I've never seen a moose before. So that was super exciting. But yeah, on the climbs, I would just kind of start falling, not tripping, but like falling backwards, falling into trees. And I'd have to stop and sit and eat something and then keep going. It would happen again because those climbs are so steep and they're relentless. You're just going forever up and up. And it's like, so there are different types of climbs, right? There's ones where you can run up them, the runnable. And then there's the type where like you kind of power hike. And then there are those that are like an extremely steep staircase, like the kind you see going into Mordor or whatever.
Yeah.
Is that the right? Yeah. Okay. I got that right. Jesse's in here.
Hi, Jesse.
Yeah. So the staircase you see going up into Mordor, that's what the mountains are like. You're using your hands. You can touch the ground in front of you. Mm-hmm. It's most likely wet and crumbly. There are some dead trees that really were helpful. And I think, like I said, it was just being like, it's okay. You can sit down, just sit down. You don't need, and then you'll feel better, eat some food, get back up, move a little more. And just reminding myself that none of these hills go forever. They do end, which is not what I normally tell myself. Usually I'm like, my strategy is a bit strange. I tell myself, this is normal. This hill is all I've ever known. And this hill is all I ever will do. This is normal. And that usually works for me, but I had to switch that up on this trail and tell myself this will end.
Yeah. I remember when I was in Wild Goose during Tropical Storm Ophelia and saying to myself, this is where I live now. It rains all the time, everywhere.
This is where I live now.
And it's like, there's nothing I can do about it. Well, that's cool. I mean, you're one of your lows turned into one of your lessons then, that it's okay to kind of sit, but now pull us out a little bit and tell us one of your highest highs during the race.
Sunset.
Finishing.
Finishing was pretty great. But I think sunset was the best. So I got to actually see the sunset from the top of Mount Osceola. And that, I think I'm really lucky that I was able to get up there to see it because there's less tree coverage. The sky was just on fire. It was amazing. And a close second is I got to see what I believe was a full moon on the last mountain. Nice. And it was, I didn't know what it was at first. I was very confused by the big old ball of light I could see through the trees in the sky. And then I was like, oh my God, that's the moon. I've known to share it with, I'm going to take a picture and you can't see it. You never can.
Yeah.
That was.
Yeah. So, take a mental picture.
Yeah.
What's that?
You got to take a mental picture. I do that all the time. Yeah. I'm like, you know what? I'm the only one that's seeing what I'm seeing right now. And I didn't even do it. I'm an idiot. I'm like, chick. And
I love that.
The best pictures, you're always going to have them in your mind forever. And no one has to see them to be amazing pictures.
I think that's great. I think we should all do that.
Yeah, you should. It's good for the soul.
Yeah. Now this is a Aravaipa race, right? Is it their only East Coast race? It might be.
They just took it over. It wasn't.
Oh.
The first year wasn't, I don't believe.
Okay.
It was, what's her name? Who's the race director? The girl? Christina Falchik.
I believe
she was the mastermind behind this.
Okay.
At least part of it. She is a beast of a trail runner up there. Awesome. She had the course record for World's End for a few years. And anyway, And then I believe they took it over when they, Aravaipa kind of spread out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, what was this, Erica, the second year of it? Or
Yeah.
This
is only year two.
I believe only year two, and I've heard of it already. So they're doing something right with their marketing.
I mean, it's Aravaipa, you know, when she's talking about the aid stations being 18 miles, 17 miles apart and 18 miles apart, it's like you can't even go by mileage because it's so slow moving. Yeah. I know that from the 18 miles from doing the PEMI loop. Like,
yeah,
you're talking hours and hours and hours between aid stations.
Yeah.
At that distance. So that's crazy.
Yeah. I don't remember how long it took me to get to the first aid station, but I want to say it was maybe 4 hours.
Wow. And you're a front of pack runner too, whether you would like to admit that or not. You are. So I mean, that's fast.
Yeah. I felt pretty fast.
Yeah. All right. Not to transition away from it too much. Grace, if you have something else to say, you can, but I want to hear what Erica has coming up this fall too.
Yeah, just one quick note in there. Larissa McFadden, she was the first place female. Mm. So just wanted to throw that in there.
I bet she trains on them hills.
She does. And you know, she tried to be all humble when she finally announced that she was the winner. She's like, I run on these hills all the time. I'm like, that does not matter in this case. Yeah. Like, that time is impressive whether you're a local or not. Like, please accept your greatness.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, what do you got in your future?
Yeah, we got some big stuff this fall. Tell us about it real quick.
Thanks to Grace, who gave me this, told me about this race while we were both crewing at World's End this past June. I found my 100 miler that I was looking for, and it's called the Twat. Another fun name in the string of fun names, Jigger Johnson, Twat, you know, just a bunch of weird names. But it stands for something that makes it make a lot more sense. The Wild Oaks Trail.
Mm-hmm.
So I have been on an unsupported kick the past few years, and this one really checked all the boxes. So they have a 25-mile race, a 100, and a 200. Mm-hmm. And these are all ish again, like the 57, 50 miler. So I think it's actually closer to 27 miles for the 25. And then the 100 miler is just a repeat of that same loop. So you're doing the same course that the 25 milers are doing, but four times.
Mm-hmm.
And then the 200 miles, eight times. So it's also unsupported, which means you only have what you bring. Mm-hmm. I think there might be drops, but I'm afraid to ask because on the website it says, if you have any questions, don't come. And I really want to go. I'm just planning for all scenarios. But I signed up for the 100 miler. It's on October 4th in West Virginia, which has its own set of epic mountains that I am excited to explore.
Yeah. And the Twat is a fat ass race. So it's been around for a while. There's actually two Twats. There's a hot Twat and a cold Twat. And this is the hot Twat. Is in October. So a bit of an underground race. It's been on my radar for a long time, and maybe someday I'll be fast enough to complete it. But it's one of those just really cool looking races that weirdos like me and you are attracted to races like this. You know, I think for any race, it doesn't matter what the race is, you know, it's got to speak to your heart, and different races speak to different people. I love picking out races for people. And so really excited that you're going to head over to the Twat.
Maybe I'll see you there this year.
We'll see about that.
Okay. That's the last I'll say on that until you tell me more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like you have to talk to Barry Main, who is an amazing runner and athlete. He sounds like he has all the answers for you.
Yeah.
Well, I will reach out to Barry Main. Is that what you said?
Yeah. M-A-I-N. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I have a lot of questions. Don't tell the race director that though.
No, yeah. He can answer your questions without you getting scalded.
Perfect. I have to say, before this podcast, I wanted to refresh my memory about the race, and I went onto the website and reread everything on there. Mm-hmm. And I swear, when I read it the first time and the second time and the third time, and I was registering for this, that it said that you needed to explain why you thought you should be able to run it. Mm. And so I kind of went a little crazy and I created a resume. I wrote essentially a freaking cover letter. And I was like, I need to run this race. And they responded like immediately, like, okay, yeah, come. just like before this call, I'm on there again. Nowhere does it say that.
No. I feel like
they think I'm crazy.
It does give that impression that you kind of have to like justify, you know, why we should let you come to this thing. I don't know. It's, you know, not in a negative way. I mean, everything on the website is, you know, I think they do a pretty good job of explaining everything. And from what I've heard, very, very great race. But yeah, it makes you feel like you have to create a video a PowerPoint presentation and some graphs and
I thankfully held the PowerPoint and the graphs back to see, you know,
next year. There's always next year.
I was just like, I'm not taking any chances. I want to make sure that they don't tell me no. But they probably read that and thought, this person's insane. Let's invite them to see how far this insane is.
Yeah. Now, is that the only thing you're signed up for right now? Do you have other fun stuff that you are prepared to discuss?
So that's my main thing. After that, next year I have some big plans, but that's it. Yeah. Next May I'm going for the thing I've been working on for, it'll be at that point, 6 years.
Yeah. I'm excited to hear about it when it happens, because it's going to happen.
It's going to happen. Third time's a charm, right?
That's right. That's what I keep telling myself, too.
Yeah. Got to give it at least 3 tries.
Yeah. Same.
All right. Grace, we got to wrap it up.
Okay. Let's do it.
Erica, what are you doing this coming weekend?
It's boring. I have a stay-at-home weekend, which we haven't had in like 3 months. Nice. I'm planning all of my Wild Roots trips for next year and submitting them for approval. And pending approval, I will have those to announce, hopefully before the new year. If maybe sooner, we'll see. DC and I is kind of hard to predict with that kind of stuff. So
that doesn't sound too boring.
I find it very exciting. I get to create a bunch of maps.
Right.
That's the best.
Fabulous.
Grace, what about you? Are you doing another 50 or what?
Oh my gosh. I am also super excited to have a stay-at-home weekend. This is the first weekend I counted back in 9 weeks that I did not have something major planned. And so I don't know what the weekend holds.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, luckily we all have a 4-day week, which is nice.
Eric, what are you doing this weekend?
And pretty boring myself. Pine Creek Challenge is happening this coming weekend, so I talked about trying to get over there maybe Sunday and help do the cleanup, which is a big endeavor with the Tiger Club. So,
I'm super excited. Jen DeVore is going.
Nice.
She's gonna be there. Callie's going to be at one of the aid stations. I'm sure lots more people we know are going to be there, and I just don't know about it. And we have our next guest booked, who is running Pine Creek as his first 100 miler.
Yeah, and there's some other good snippets in there that we can add to his story when he comes on. Where he's talking about now, but it should be a good show. Hopefully a successful 100 miler for him, and we'll have him on the week after the race, the Monday after the race.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, that's right. Next Monday, we're going to have on Dan Lamort. And it's, I don't know about you, but I had several people send me this reel from this ultra runner who's also a comedian. Like, you should have him on the show. And I'm like, all right, well, let's just reach out to him. And so I did. And he's like, oh, yeah, I've already listened to the show. And I'm like, oh, that is so cool. Come be on the show. And he agreed to.
Yeah, that is neat.
It is neat. And I'm excited. So that means we have at least three listeners. I mean, that's pretty cool. We're moving up.
Getting there. Got you. We got me. Yeah. Got Eric. Exactly.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And we have Dan. So yeah. We're good.
All right. You guys have a great week. Erica, thank you. I know you're probably dead tired. I'm tired, and I did half of what you did today. So go get home and get some sleep. Thank you for being on the show.
Yeah.
Yes. Thanks for coming in again, Erica. We can't wait to have you on again. We'll have you on all kinds of times onto the show. And if you're listening, like us and leave us some comments and some reviews and feed that algorithm monster and share the show and tune in again next Monday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern live. And we are going to talk about Pine Creek Challenge, which is a race in Pennsylvania on the Pine Creek Retro.
Yeah. And Erica, I want you to come on after you run this race again so you can give us a very descriptive of what the twat looked like and what it felt like and how it was.
And answer all the questions.
You got it.
All right, take us out, Grace.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Bye.